One significant implication of this situation is that no literary aristocracy emerged in colonial America. Reading was not regarded as an elitist activity, and printed matter was spread evenly among all kinds of people. A thriving, classless reading culture developed because, as Daniel Boorstin writes, it was diffuse. Its center was everywhere because it was nowhere. Every man was close to what printed matter talked about. Everyone could speak the same language. It was the product of a busy, mobile, public society. By 1772, Jacob Duché could write, "The poorest laborer upon the shore of the Delaware thinks himself entitled to deliver his sentiment in matters of religion or politics with as much freedom as the gentleman or scholar. Such is the prevailing taste for books of every kind that almost every man is a reader." Where such a keen taste for books prevailed among the general population, we need not be surprised that Thomas Paine's Common Sense, published on January 10, 1776, sold more than 100,000 copies by March of the same year. In 1985, a book would have to sell 8 million copies in 2 months to match the proportion of the population Paine's book attracted. If we go beyond March 1776, a more awesome set of figures is given by Howard Fast. No one knows just how many copies were actually printed. The most conservative sources place the figure at something over 300,000 copies. Others place it just under 500,000. Taking a figure of 400,000 in a population of 3 million, a book published today would have to sell 24 million copies to do as well. The only communication event that could produce such collective attention in today's America is the Super Bowl. It is worth pausing here for a moment to say something of Thomas Paine, for in an important way he is a measure of the high and wide level of literacy that existed in his time. In particular, I want to note that in spite of his lowly origins, no question has ever been raised, as it has with Shakespeare, about whether or not Paine was, in fact, the author of the works attributed to him. It is true that we know more of Paine's life than Shakespeare's, although not more of Paine's early periods, but it is also true that Paine had less formal schooling than Shakespeare and came from the lowest laboring class before he arrived in America. In spite of these disadvantages, Paine wrote political philosophy and polemics the equal in lucidity and vitality, although not quantity, of Voltaire's, Rousseau's, and contemporary English philosophers, including Edmund Burke. Yet no one asked the question, how could an unschooled staymaker from England's impoverished class produce such stunning prose? From time to time, Paine's lack of education was pointed out by his enemies, and he himself felt inferior because of this deficiency, but it was never doubted that such powers of written expression could originate from a common man. It is also worth mentioning that the full title of Paine's most widely read book is Common Sense, Written by an Englishman. The tagline is important here because, as noted earlier, Americans did not write many books in the colonial period, which Benjamin Franklin tried to explain by claiming that Americans were too busy doing other things. Perhaps so, but Americans were not too busy to make use of the printing press, even if not for books they themselves had written. The first printing press in America was established in 1638 as an adjunct of Harvard University, which was 2 years old at the time. Presses were established shortly thereafter in Boston and Philadelphia without resistance by the Crown, a curious fact, since at this time presses were not permitted in Liverpool and Birmingham, among other English cities. The earliest use of the press was for the printing of newsletters, mostly done on cheap paper. It may well be that the development of an American literature was retarded not by the industry of the people or the availability of English literature, but by the scarcity of quality paper. As late as Revolutionary days, George Washington was forced to write to his generals on unsightly scraps of paper, and his dispatches were not enclosed in envelopes, paper being too scarce for such use. Yet by the late 17th century, there was a beginning to a native literature that turned out to have as much to do with the typographic bias of American culture as books. I refer, of course, to the newspaper, at which Americans first tried their hand on September 25, 1690, in Boston, when Benjamin Harris printed the first edition of a three-page paper he called Public Occurrences Both Foreign and Domestic. Before he came to America, Harris had played a role in exposing a non-existent conspiracy of Catholics to slaughter Protestants and burn London. His London newspaper, Domestic Intelligence, revealed the Popish plot, with the result that Catholics were harshly persecuted. Harris, no stranger to mendacity, indicated in his prospectus for Public Occurrences that a newspaper was necessary to combat the spirit of lying which then prevailed in Boston, and, I am told, still does. He concluded his prospectus with the following sentence: "It is supposed that none will dislike this proposal but such as intend to be guilty of so villainous a crime." Harris was right about who would dislike his proposal. The second issue of public occurrences never appeared. The governor and council suppressed it, complaining that Harris had printed reflections of a very high nature, by which they meant that they had no intention of admitting any impediments to whatever villainy they wished to pursue. Thus, in the New World began the struggle for freedom of information, which, in the Old, had begun a century before. Harris's abortive effort inspired other attempts at newspaper publication. For example, the Boston Newsletter, published in 1704, generally regarded as the first continuously published American newspaper. This was followed by the Boston Gazette in 1719 and the New England Courant in 1721, whose editor, James Franklin, was the older brother of Benjamin. By 1730, there were 7 newspapers published regularly in 4 colonies, and by 1800, there were more than 180. In 1770, the New York Gazette congratulated itself and other papers by writing, in part, "'Tis truth, with deference to the college, newspapers are the spring of knowledge, the general source throughout the nation of every modern conversation." At the end of the 18th century, the Reverend Samuel Miller boasted that the United States had more than 2/3 the number of newspapers available in England and yet had only half the population of England. In 1786, Benjamin Franklin observed that Americans were so busy reading newspapers and pamphlets that they scarcely had time for books. One book they apparently always had time for was Noah Webster's American Spelling Book, for it sold more than 24 million copies between 1783 and 1843. Franklin's reference to pamphlets ought not to go unnoticed. The proliferation of newspapers in all the colonies was accompanied by the rapid diffusion of pamphlets and broadsides. Alexis de Tocqueville took note of this fact in his Democracy in America, published in 1835. In America, he wrote, parties do not write books to combat each other's opinions, but pamphlets, which are circulated for a day with incredible rapidity and then expire. And he referred to both newspapers and pamphlets when he observed, the invention of firearms equalized the vassal and the noble on the field of battle. The art of printing opened the same resources to the minds of all classes. The post brought knowledge alike to the door of the cottage and to the gate of the palace. At the time Tocqueville was making his observations of America, printing had already spread to all the regions of the country. The South had lagged behind the North not only in the formation of schools, almost all of which were private rather than public, but in its uses of the printing press. Virginia, for example, did not get its first regularly published newspaper, the Virginia Gazette, until 1736. But toward the end of the 18th century, the movement of ideas via the printed word was relatively rapid, and something approximating a national conversation emerged. For example, the Federalist Papers, an outpouring of 85 essays written by Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay, all under the name of Publius, originally appeared in a New York newspaper during 1787 and 1788, but were read almost as widely in the South as the North.